Hello everybody, Miles Mahon, and this is Mahon's Gadget Talk for Thursday, 30th of March, 2023. In today's episode, we've got plenty of things to talk about, as always. We've got new phones to talk about. Lenovo is leaving, is not selling, making gaming phones anymore. Plus, Kia's new EV9 that we're going to talk about a little bit in depth. So yeah, without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? First, we're going to talk about is Apple, and Apple is doing its WWDC event, Worldwide Developers Conference, this June, from June 5th to June 9th. And there'll be an opportunity if you obviously are an iOS dev or obviously a dev of Apple's software or make apps for Apple's operating systems. You can see the latest versions in person and some new features potentially. On top of that, we might see the AR and VR headset that has been rumored for a long, long time. And interestingly, the state press release mentions this, you know, subversively. As part of Apple's ongoing commitment to helping developers create innovative apps, the event will also provide them with unique access to Apple engineers, as always, like every year, as well as insight into new technologies and tools to help them realize their visions. Now, that last one, I think the clue's kind of enough. And also the picture that is widely shared. Someone mentioned online that this kind of looks like the pancake lens that you see in AR or VR headsets. So this kind of means Apple is kind of working on it. But also, as I heard Ming-Chi Kuo, I read something from Ming-Chi Kuo earlier today, and it was kind of like that Apple's not been able to produce enough headsets. So yeah, we might not be seeing this until the end of this year, maybe, or probably early next year. So, but still, if they do show it off and announce to the world, like they did years ago, like with the Apple Watch, for example, the AirPods and the AirPower, the last one never happened really, but the AirPower, I remember with AirPods and Apple Watch, is that they announced it kind of like early on, and then it took them, obviously took them many, many months before it shipped to consumers, especially the AirPods. They came out many, many months later after the reveal in September, mind you. So fact is that Apple will probably show off the AR VR headset, but as I said, they will ship it a later date, at the end of this year, potentially, early next year, probably by spring next year, that would also be great. By then, they'll figure out the software and the manufacturing that is. But as I said, can't wait to see what they bring in store in June. Alrighty, moving on. Let's talk about a bunch of new phones. First up is Redmi Note 12 from Xiaomi. The Note series arguably is the most popular line of phones from Xiaomi. I think from some folks I kind of know in my own circle, family friend circle, happen to own a Redmi Note phone, or at best have a Redmi pretty much. It's arguably Xiaomi's most popular and well more iconic smartphone series pretty much. Right hand in hand with the flagship Xiaomi phones. So you got, but what you're getting here with the Redmi Note 12 is improved fast charging, improved displays and cameras, which is what I think everyone really wants. These are really, really interesting features that you find on high-end phones, but now you get on mid-range phones that are under $400 starting out. So you have four different models. You have the Redmi Note 12, the 5G variant of it. Yes, there's a 4G and 5G variant, but again, makes sense given the target market or audience for those phones. The 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Plus both have 5G in them, in case you're wondering. So we'd start with the 4G variant, pretty much. Now, the thing I would say about the Redmi Note 12 regular is both have Snapdragon chips. So if you kind of have an ick for, let's just say, as the kids would say, for for MediaTek chips, you might want to check this out. So the 4G variant of the Note 12 is powered by a Snapdragon 685, a slightly older chip, but, you know, kind of will do the job, let's just say that. Now, one thing I want to say right here straight off the bat is you're not going to be getting out-of-this-world high-performance processors on these phones. You'll just be getting features that, again, I think everyone really will find it useful or handy, and that you can definitely take advantage of if you know how to use it. The 5G variant of the Redmi Note 12 features a newer Snapdragon 4 Gen 1 chip, and then more or less the real difference, both have the same display, pretty much same battery and fast charging, 33 watt fast charging, a 5000 mAh battery, I think a mono speaker from the spec sheet reading it here, and a headphone jack, which I think most phones don't really have, including iPhones and some Android flagships. So that's nice to have. And the real, really the difference is the cameras and what the storage options you can get. So the 5G variant Note 12 will go all the way up to 256 gigabytes from 128, and then the 4G variant will go from 64 gigabytes to 128 gigabytes, pretty much. And as I said, the 4G and 5G variant, the really big difference on top of the Snapdragon chip, and as I said, the lack of 5G on the other one, the RF with the 4G one, is the regular Note 12 has a 50 megapixel wide, 8 megapixel ultra wide, and 2 megapixel macro, whereas you get a 48 megapixel main camera on the 5G variant of the Note 12. Now, if we switch things to the Pro, and this is where it gets a little bit exciting, if you really aren't into your smart Android smartphones, the Redmi Note 12 Pro really features 120Hz displays, apparently Flow AMOLED, POLED displays, so give you slimmer bezels generally. On top of that, you have Dolby Vision and Atmos support, so that explains the slightly higher price tag for these phones. 5,000 mAh battery, like the regular Redmi Note 12s, but also get this: you're really getting the same processor in the Dimensity 1080, so that's pretty interesting. But yeah, the real difference with the Pro and Pro Plus, both have 5G. In case you're wondering, as I've said earlier, is really the cameras, the fast charging. So it's for two different kinds of the two different flavors: regular and spicy, or in this case, spicy and extra spicy. So the regular Pro comes at 5G, as I've said. It goes up to 256 gigabytes straight off the bat. Dual 5G support, like the Pro Plus. You get dual speakers, also, that's on the Pro Plus. But get this, on the regular Pro, you get 67 watt turbo charging, so that's the term for fast charging. 50 megapixel IMX766 wide angle camera, 8 megapixel ultra wide, 2 megapixel macro. But the Pro Plus is where things get pretty interesting. You get 200 megapixel wide angle camera, 8 megapixel ultra wide, and 2 megapixel macro. So the Pro Plus comes with a beefier camera, main camera, with a 200 megapixel camera. As I said, both have the same selfie camera at 16 megapixels, so not much of a difference. Another one for the Pro Plus, 120 watt fast charging. So that's pretty awesome if you look at it in this way. So basically, in a nutshell, with the Redmi Note 12 series, you have the 4G, 5G variant Note 12, which kind of come with Snapdragon chips, which come with decent cameras, and again, fast charging to get you through the day. And it's for regular casual folks who like to do their WhatsApp and, you know, kind of, you know, have their own business, or as I said, don't want an iPhone or a Samsung, but kind of want it Xiaomi, but don't want to pay an arm and a leg and a kidney for it. So it's basically for them. And then the Pro and the Pro Plus are really for power users, Android smartphone users who use their phones quite a lot more than usual than casuals. You play games on them, you stream content on it. This is kind of for you. You get a much nicer AMOLED display, 120Hz, beefy cameras. The Pro Plus comes with a 200 megapixel camera, pretty much. And yeah, both have a MediaTek chip, Dimensity 1080. So it's pretty nice, as I said, if you know what you can do with it, pretty much. I've not used a MediaTek, I might have used a MediaTek phone in the past, but I've not used one with a Dimensity chip, so I cannot speak from experience how good they are, might potentially. But yeah, the Pro Plus has 120 watt fast charging, so it's pretty cool. And as I said, really the only downside, let's just say indirectly, is you might be the material, you're not gonna get premium materials, you're not gonna have a shiny design phone. It's gonna be all right, it's gonna be cool, it's gonna do the job, let's just say that. You might be missing some few bits and bobs in some places, but more than everything, you're just getting top-notch displays, cameras, and fast charging, and things really people really, really need. And processors-wise, you're gonna get through, let's just say that. So these are pretty cool phones, in a way. Alright, so the Redmi Note 12 comes in a bunch of colors, gray, green, and blue for the regular. And for the Pro, you're getting midnight black, polar white, and sky blue, which kind of look elegant in pictures and also in real life. Again, we'll do the job, and as I said, you won't be looking at the back of your phone as much as compared to an Android or and compared to a Samsung or an Apple user. But yeah, the Redmi Note 12 will start from 400 euros, pretty much, and the 12 Pro Plus 5G, also the Pro Plus, will start from 499 euros. So it's a 100 euro difference. It's a little significant, but I'd say that the Pro would obviously do the job in a way. And then the regular Redmi Note 12 5G variant will cost €300 starting, and the Redmi Note 12 will start at €200, which is kind of interesting. So you're paying a little bit more than usual for these phones, but as I said, it'll get the job done, and hopefully there are some stable software that come with these phones, because I've kind of been hearing from online that the other big problem with these phones is the software. Sort of, it can be a little buggy sometimes, it can be slow, and then obviously a few patches will fix it, of course, but again, it's not like a rock solid experience. But yeah, slightly increased prices are probably a result of inflation generally, like it is with other, like with Samsung, for example. So yeah, it's pretty interesting, nonetheless, something to take note of. Alright, but if you're not satisfied with the global variant, let's just say, you probably can't stand the processor choice, let's just say that. I mean, Dimensity 1080 is alright for some people, the Snapdragon 4 Gen 1 is alright, but you really want more performance, you want more. Good news, if you live in China, you can get the Redmi Note 12 Turbo. It can get kind of confusing with variants, but this one, this is the real deal. Boys and girls, the Redmi Note 12 Turbo features the Snapdragon 7 Plus Gen 2, a recently announced mid-range chip. It's again below the Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 in terms of performance. You can get the spec'd up to 16 gigabytes of RAM and get this 1 terabyte of actual storage. 1 terabyte for a mid-ranger, and starting to be kind of like, you know, beginning of the mid of the high-end range, but 1 terabyte, you could, there's room for activities, let's say. You can store a lot of games, you could store a lot of content, you could store endless seasons of your favorite shows on this, with a 1 terabyte variant. And heck, they're even doing a Harry Potter limited edition. Abracadabra, this is going to be a really fast phone. I just had to slip that in. At least this will tame Voldemort with an iPhone. I'm sorry, I had to add that reference in. In case you're wondering, the Harry Potter edition of this phone will cost $350 in China. But it'll be slightly pared down, 12 gigabytes of RAM, 256 gigabytes of storage, but it's a really cool looking phone, and if you are a Potterhead, which probably is the case, you might want to check this out over your Samsung and iPhone for once. I'm sorry, I have to be a bit of a fanboy, because I like my Xiaomi, a bit of a Xiaomi fanboy. I talk about this with interest. Anyways, so on top of the maxed out storage and processor, potentially, you get 6.67-inch AMOLED display, FHD+, 120Hz, 16-megapixel selfie camera, 64-megapixel camera on the back, the main one, 8-megapixel ultra-wide, 2-megapixel macro, 5,000mAh battery, 67-watt fast charging, Android 13 or MIUI 14, pretty much, 5.56, Bluetooth 5.3, IR blaster, headphone jack. This is really the Redmi Note 12 for enthusiasts. I'm gonna say it right here. This is for the gamers, for the power users. If you really wanted a high performance, you wanted a Redmi Note that will last you a couple of years comfortably. You don't have money for an S23 Plus. You don't have money for a Vivo X70 or one of those X90 or one of those phones out there. This is the one to look for. And good news, it starts from $300. This is for the base spec, 8 gigabytes, 256 gigabytes of storage. I have a hunch that this model, I don't think Xiaomi release a global variant. They're gonna badge it under the Poco name for some reason. I have a feeling. It's this. I might be wrong. Who knows? But I have a feeling they're gonna badge this under the Poco name to make it more exciting for the rest of the world. Because a Redmi Note 12 Turbo, like people who are thinking of a Note 12 Pro, they're gonna end up running for this. So I have a hunch that they're gonna badge this under the Poco brand, and they're gonna obviously market it a little bit. To around $400 or $500, because it looks exciting. And come on, a 1 terabyte variant, this would easily, for the rest of the world, it would easily be a $600 phone outside of China. I mean, it's cost $400 right now, roughly, after currency conversion, but this looks like a $600 phone potentially with the maxed out storage, easily. So it's an exciting phone if you think about it that way. Right, next bunch of smartphones we're going to talk about are the Huawei P60, the P60 Pro, and the Mate X3. Now, the thing I'm going to preface here by saying is that these are phones that they've launched in China first, and obviously, if you live over there, they're pretty good phones to get because Harmony OS works, or you get all the apps and services you really need, so you won't have to worry. But obviously, if you live outside China and they do manage to offer a global variant, I wouldn't really recommend these, honestly. So that's what I'm going to say straight off the bat. But these are pretty cool premium phones that you definitely might want to check out if you're kind of the adventurous kind. So the P60 and the P60 Pro are Huawei's main flagship smartphones. And I just remembered that Huawei still makes phones. I'm sorry. So that's pretty interesting in a way. You basically got premium, well-polished phones design-wise. And of course, the software, as I've said, is pretty good. It's pretty decent as far as I've understand. So start with the P60 and the P60 Pro. Come with the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1 chip, but this one does not offer 5G. This is the 4G only 8 Gen 1. Now, long story short, everyone knows Huawei's kind of been obviously Huawei's been on this kind of US entity list, and that kind of means they couldn't get they can't get advanced materials like other brands, and that kind of means if Qualcomm's offering chips to Huawei, it's going to be the 4G variant, so it's a bit pared down. So in that point, at that point, and given how much you're spending, I wouldn't necessarily recommend these phones, because you might miss out on the 5G capability. At this point, you can get other rivaling brands if you want 5G capability and performance. And a bit of a bummer, honestly, given that Huawei produces 5G equipment, network equipment, and runs software-backed 5G networks around the world, and also in China. So, yeah, this is kind of, let's just say it's been handicapped in that way. And I think that's the biggest downside. Anyways, the P60 comes with interesting specs on top, other than the 4G-only chipset. You have a 66 watt wired fast charging. In terms of that, you have a 4,850 mAh battery, 50 watt fast wireless fast charging, and that elegant back that is apparently looks kind of like mother of pearl, which is quite fashionable and again quite stylish. And as I said, if you got sophisticated taste, you might want to look at this phone. If you live in China, though, that's the thing. Other than that, you have a 12 megapixel 5x periscope lens camera, and yeah, you have a main and ultra wide camera, which apparently is the same as the P60 Pro, and that include that basically is a 40 megapixel actually mind you a 48 megapixel main sensor and 13 megapixel ultra wide. And speaking of the Pro, the P60 Pro is a slightly fancy, of course, like the regular, but you get better cameras, and as I said, display and other interesting features. So to start with, you have the P60 and the P60 Pro come with a main 48 megapixel super sensing camera, giving you variable aperture support from f1.4 to f4.0 right on the phone. So there's no software, you can have that straight away. RYYB color filter for low light snaps, according to Android Authority, that is. Anyways, on the Pro, you have a 40 megapixel 3.5x periscope shooter, and that's all in the back. And as I said, you essentially have three big sensors, and you have the main and obviously then the periscope shooter on the Pro, and a 30 megapixel ultra wide angle camera that gives you again a triple rear camera system. Interestingly, the periscope sensor basically does the work of macro and telephoto. Does telephoto macro and zoom shots at the same time, and I think that's great. That means you don't need to waste space on the back of the phone for more random sensors you don't really need. It's good to see that Huawei has offered a telephoto macro sensor. That's good, to say the least. You have a 6.67-inch LTPO 120Hz OLED display. Again, premium display and cameras, not that bad. Premium fast charging and 256GB of storage straight off the bat. A 4,850 mAh battery, 88 watt wired fast charging, and 50 watt wireless fast charging. Interestingly, it comes with Bluetooth 5.2 support, in-display fingerprint sensor, IR blaster, and Huawei's very own custom NM card for extra storage, and two-way satellite communication. I've heard this before, but I read that Huawei was looking to offer satellite connectivity on these phones, but apparently on the P60 series and the X3 foldable, Huawei offers two-way satellite communication, so you can send text, but obviously that's available in China only. But again, nice to have if you live over there, if you, you know, go on a hiking trip, or I don't know, go on a road trip and suddenly your tire's deflated, or you need to swap your EV batteries. I'm sure you have a NIO if you drive that car. You can send a text message to your friend or someone or to road repair and you know or emergency services, and you can again, you can get your car fixed if you've done just that. The phones, as I said, come with IP68 water and dust resistance. That's on the Pro, by the way. Yeah, it's pretty interesting premium smartphone. I have a feeling they're going to launch a global variant of it in Europe and the Middle East. But as I said, it won't come with Google services, so that's really the bigger bummer. The big bummer, let's just say, of the phone. The lack of 5G is another big deal breaker in a way. The regular P60 will cost, set you back around $657 or 4,488 yuan renminbi. And the Pro starts from $1,000 roughly. That's about roughly 7,000 yuan renminbi. So it's pretty interesting. And you can get them, if you live in China, right away. So that's pretty cool in a way. But as I said, if you ask me, it doesn't really have Google services if you live outside of China. You could route it if you want, but it will be of no help. Not having 5G, it's a deal breaker, especially it being a premium phone at a premium price point. You've got to have those functionalities, but hey, this is out of their control, so they can't do much, to say the least. On the flip side, get it? Huawei is showing up the latest foldable phone, the Mate X3. And now it's this sort of a notebook design like the Galaxy Z Fold 3, Z Fold 4, mind you. And you have a 6.4-inch FHD Plus outer display, 120Hz display, LTPO, all that good stuff. 7.85-inch inner display, also same display tech and refresh rate, but larger in resolution. And the folding screen, apparently, again, according to Huawei, it's got an impact-resistant design. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And it's quite compact at just 2.39 grams, so it's quite light. And 5.3 millimeters thin when unfolded completely. And you got a feather sand glass, like the P60, on the back, giving you that elegant look. It's a matte finish from the looks of the pictures. And you got a quad camera display at the back that gives you roughly, that is 50 megapixel main, 30 megapixel ultra wide with macro, 5x periscope sensor, 12 megapixels. And I think the fourth sensor would basically be the color filter. I think it'd probably be the laser scanner, so you can, you know, go out instead of and take better photos indirectly. You got dual SIM support, that's nice to have. Aura Blaster, a side fingerprint scanner instead of in-display fingerprint sensor. Two-way satellite messaging. As I said, you can send texts over satellite two-way, and that's thanks to the Baidu system. That's basically the same. I think there's the Baidu GPS system, and then there's this one for two-way SMS over satellite. So that's pretty cool in a way, and that works in China only. So that's something to think of. That's something to take note of in a way. The Mate X3 will set you back around $2,000 or 12,999 yuan. At this point, for the same amount of money in China, you could get an electric bike or scooter, but you can get this folding phone, so that's pretty interesting in a way. And if you think about specs, I've not gone into detail. It's basically more or less like the P60 Pro, but with some nice added bonus, the same processor and storage and all that kind of stuff, and fast charging, it's similar. And interestingly enough, as I said, it's got the flex mode capability like on Samsung phones too, equally, and IPX8 water rating, not dust resistance, on here. So that's pretty interesting in a way. It's basically the folding version of the P60 Pro. So it's an interesting folding phone in a way. As I said, I usually wouldn't recommend Huawei devices unless you're willing to go through the whole not using Google services or the Google Play Store or living without 5G or any of those features. But these are kind of good, well-designed phones for high-end consumers. All right, moving on to the next story, kind of in the world of Android. Lenovo is discontinuing the Legion smartphone line. Now, in case you're wondering about Lenovo, they make the Legion gaming laptops. They're popular and they're selling like hotcakes in the world of gaming laptops. But they also made Android-based Legion gaming phones running Android, allowing you to play, you know, mobile games at very high refresh rates. They came with built-in fans, multiple cameras, and air triggers. And they're pretty cool as it is. But apparently, there kind of been rumors circulating that Lenovo was going to stop making Legion phones because they've not made enough money. They've been losing money on this. No one buys these phones in a way. They're quite expensive, of course, in a way. But more than everything, it's not been the hit that Lenovo hoped for. It seems like Lenovo is going to put more emphasis on the Motorola business because that's selling like hotcakes and not Legion phones. I think it's just marketing. Like, these phones have been around, but the thing is, most people don't know that these phones exist. And the audience that buys gaming phones either sort of ends up going for gaming laptops and they'll run Android emulators on them, or they're going to get any box standard high-end flagship phone or even an iPhone. And I think that's the thing you have. The mobile gaming market, it's not like a PC or console or handheld gaming that people are going to invest in a full-blown device to play all their games in. If they could play your PUBG or Free Fire at 60 frames a second or even 30 frames a second on a God knows $300 phone, wouldn't need something like this anyways. Lenovo then obviously went on to issue a statement, quote, and that's their words, not mine. According to Lenovo, Lenovo is discontinuing its Android-based Legion mobile gaming phones as part of a wider business transformation and gaming portfolio consolidation. As the leader in gaming devices and solutions, Lenovo is committed to advancing the gaming category across form factors, as well as focusing on where it can bring the most value to the global gaming community. Long story short, they're gonna keep on making gaming PCs, laptops, all-in-ones, even like handhelds that kind of like look like the Steam Deck, but not Legion smartphones. That kind of sucks. This means technically that only Asus now has gaming phones, and they're still going strong with the ROG phone. But then again, that's Asus. They don't have a massive smartphone business to start with. They only ever make two lines of phones every year compared to Lenovo. Lenovo has their own sort of branded phones, the Moto lineup phones, and the Moto Edge flagships are pretty good. That can technically be a gaming phone to some people. You can get the Moto Edge phones, and again, you can play games at 120 frames a second, and you won't really feel a difference, honestly. And most mobile gamers, preferably, as I said earlier, go for high-performance smartphones with best-in-class chips, displays, and those kind of bits and bobs. And then, if you want to get, you know, game controllers, that you can get that separately, of course. So, kind of a bummer, but let's face it, not everyone is into gaming phones, and there's not a massive market out there. Probably there is a large market out there for a Legion gaming handheld that runs Windows or Steam Deck OS, and it'll probably give me like millions of consumers who will run out buying them because that's popular. But then again, if you really want to play, if you want to game on your phone like a pro, you're going to get a flagship. So, not surprising in a way. Someone posted on Weibo, apparently, because I've just read this up, that we're going to be getting a new Oppo folding phone, the successor to the Oppo N2 that came out a few months back. And apparently it will come with the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 chip, a 4,805 mAh battery. Like most folding phones of this variety in the that are coming out these days, apparently it'll be focused, it'll be quite slim and compact compared to the original. It was quite a chonky boy when it came out. So it'll be quite, it'll be razor thin, let's say, and compact. And apparently you'll get dual selfie cameras pretty much. And then a 50 megapixel Sony IMX 890 main sensor OIS, 48 megapixel IMX 581 ultrawide, and 32 megapixel telephoto, again, on the back of the phone. Again, I would suspect that the selfie cameras on the inner display, okay, this is for both inside and outside, interestingly, but more than everything, an 8-inch main display, so it'll be more or less like the original, but a little bit larger, with a 2,268 by 2,440 pixel display, 120Hz refresh rate, interestingly, so slightly larger compared to the original Find N2 in a way. When it'll be coming out, probably in a few months' time, so that's something to look forward to in a way. Well, we already talked about phones. OnePlus was posted on their website a few more details about the Nord CE 3 Lite. I don't cover OnePlus generally, but well, let's just get through this one. So the Nord CE 3 Lite is going to be coming out next week, and we've already gotten some new details about it. Firstly, it's going to come with the Snapdragon 695 chip, like its predecessor. Not the fastest chip out there, but has 5G. And again, like the Nord CE2 Lite, so I'm sure they're sticking what they know or they're familiar with. You're going to get 8 gigabytes of RAM, and you can double it with virtual memory functionality, 128 gigabytes of storage, 108 megapixel main camera with 3x zoom straight off the bat, and two extra sensors, but we don't know what they will feature. Probably ultrawide and macro, let's assume that. 6.72-inch, 120 hertz display, and a 5,000 mAh battery at 67-watt fast charging, essentially giving you one day's worth of power after half an hour of charging. And apparently might cost the same as the previous Nord CE2 Lite in a way. So that's interesting. Obviously, the phone will be launching next week along with the Nord Buds 2. So that's pretty interesting in a way. Do you use a OnePlus phone? I'd love to know. Do obviously reach out in the show. The details are in the show notes and obviously on my socials if you have some thoughts to share. All right, we're already talking about OnePlus. Let's talk about the limited edition OnePlus 11 Jupiter Rock limited edition phone. Now, the real big difference here is the back texture. It's inspired by the rock surface on the planet Jupiter, and it's pretty interesting. It's made out of 3D microcrystalline rock, and it's quite textured and supposed to feel like rocks and dust out of Jupiter. So apparently they use natural graining technology, which results in different textures and in a way. And that means that there's a light brown cover on the back, but has numerous little white flecks in a way, and a few dark flecks that are randomly scattered on it. So the white bits are supposed to be like diamond rain, and then the darker ones should be, you know, stuff from meteorites. So it's supposed to give you a feel like you've touched the surface of Jupiter. And apparently it'll be cool to the touch. Other than that, the back should feel like jade stone that's kind of been washed by water for thousands of years. Basically, a very nice feeling phone. Now, if you live in China or obviously live around Southeast Asia, you know how wonderful jade stone is, so I don't have to go into detail about that. So it's basically a limited edition OnePlus 11, and it's got that textured surface, and it's pretty cool. I'll set you back around $711 US. For the base spec, for the spec, 16 gigabytes of RAM, 512 gigabytes of storage. That's around 4,900 yuan RMB, and only be available in China, and also be available in India later on. So that's pretty interesting, in a way. And while we're already talking about phones, let's slip one in already. A Geekbench result has came out, and apparently, it might be the benchmark result for the Z Fold 5 and Z Flip 5. And how do we kind of tell? It's basically the unit number, it's the model number SMF946U, which apparently is for the Z Fold 5. And also, apparently, it's happened to use the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 for Galaxy chip, an optimized version of the 8 Gen 2 for Samsung phones. And then the Z Flip 5 is the SMF731U. The Fold posted a Geekbench score of 2014 and single core and 5022 for multi-core, whereas the Flip scored a 2030 for single score and 5213 for multi-core. So it's pretty interesting as it is in a way. And I just wanted to remind you, if you're probably listening at a very high volume and you're hearing background noises, I sincerely apologize because I'm trying to get this recorded and uploaded. And there's obviously sounds outside my control that happen, so we'd want to apologize for that. But let's talk about cameras and smartphones and stuff like that. And in the Insta360 Flow, new gadget, pretty much. It's the latest product from Insta360. In the past year or so, they've launched a new camera, a webcam, and all kind of other products. And this is the first smartphone gimbal stabilizer. Now, if you're familiar with those products, you probably are familiar with the Osmo Mobile. So you connect your phone to it, and with a press of a button and with the appropriate app, it'll essentially stabilize smartphone footage and do object tracking. And stabilizing and object tracking is thanks to AI technology. Their Deep Track 3.0 allows you to follow objects, individuals in real time, including person re-identification. If they block from view, it'll just keep on following it regardless. And it looks a little cinematic, from the sample videos. All angle tracking, slow zoom tracking, slow motion, and live mode tracking. So that's pretty cool in a way. And on top of that, you have gesture control. So it allows you to start recording and follow stuff with a press of a button. So that's pretty cool in a way. And also it doubles pretty much, or triples pretty much, as a selfie stick, tripod, and power bank with a design. So it's quite intuitive in a way. It also has a built-in cold shoe, so you can put in a mic to really step up your recording game. So it's pretty cool in a way. And you can set it, simply set it right up in one step. So you just sort of unfold it and off you go in a way. And you even have features like hoop mode, which is good for basketball fans. So if you're recording yourself, you know, shooting a basketball into the net, you can have that switched on. And the moment it recognizes you've done a hoop or you dunked it, it sort of saves it in memory, and you can record, and you can obviously edit it out later when you go back to edit it in the app. You get 12-hour battery life from the stabilizer. And again, you have features like Paranoma, dolly zoom, and much more. So it's pretty cool in a way. It costs $160. You get the clamp for your phone, a charge cable, the thing itself, and other bits and bobs. It's pretty cool in a way. And if you do record on your smartphone quite a lot, this is something you definitely want to check out. It's $160, so it's a touch bit more than the whatever DJI offers at that price point. But again, it has Insta360's AI capability, which is truly cool to see. It's a pretty cool gimbal nonetheless. All right, finally moving on to EVs and Kia. So the Kia EV9 has finally been fully revealed from start to finish. So 2 weeks back, I talked about the design of the car, which is based off its original concept, which the car is based on. And now we have full information about the EV9, pretty much here to reshape the way we move, according to Kia, in a way. So you have a bunch of cool features. It's a fully electric three-seater SUV. You get three different options: the rear-wheel drive standard, long-range rear-wheel drive, and all-wheel drive variants. The standard rear-wheel drive will come with 76.1 kilowatt hour battery and can do 0 to 100 kilometers per hour in 8.2 seconds, pretty much. Whereas the long-range variant of the rear-wheel drive will come with 150 kilowatt-hour battery and can go 0 to 100 in 9.4 seconds. Now, the difference really comes from the fact that the long-range model will come with a bigger and fatter battery pack. The all-wheel drive will come with a 283 kilowatt combined dual electric motor powertrain, giving you 600 newton meters of torque and letting you go 0 to 100 in just 6 seconds. So that's pretty cool in a way. As for battery sizes, the standard rear-wheel drive will come with a 76.1 kilowatt-hour battery, and the long-range and all-wheel drive variants will come with 99.8 kilowatt-hours of battery range. So that's pretty cool in a way. And weirdly enough, if you have the all-wheel drive variant, if you want to go further and get 700 newton meters of torque and a reduced 0 to 100 time of 5.3 seconds, you can get an optional boost feature in the Kia Connect store, which is basically a software upgrade, so you can get that later on and get more performance out of the car. So, and this is interesting enough, this is the EV9 is going to be the first car that Kia is going to offer with software upgrades, letting you upgrade features like the digital pattern lighting grille and lighting pattern, and as I said, the boost functionality. So that's pretty interesting in a way. And smart remote start parking assist 2.0 will come with a with an upgrade in the Connect store potentially. So that's pretty interesting in a way. We're not seeing another Kia car before. On top of that, the EV9 will come with Highway Driving Pilot, giving you level 3 autonomous driving. So that's pretty cool in a way, in select markets to start with. And that's because it features 15 sensors, 2 LiDAR scanners, allowing it to scan, detect objects in a full 360 degree field of view. And apparently this will only be available on the EV9 GT line edition that's apparently been announced along with EV9. The GT line variant will be coming later on in the future. So that's pretty much interesting in a way. And as I said, speaking of the GT line, you have the digital pattern lighting grille and all that. It's sportier, pretty much, long story short, and will have more performance compared to the regular EV9 in a way. And yeah, what can we say? It's a pretty cool all-electric SUV. It's pushing the limits of Kia's EV architecture in a way. So it's almost maxing out the capability. On top of that, speaking of which, you're probably wondering on mileage. The rear-wheel drive long range will come with an estimated 541 kilometers of range using the WLTP tests. And this range has been coded in the press release. There's no other information about the other variants and how much battery, how much mileage you'll get. But probably it's best to assume that the dual motors and larger battery packs will probably mean that you'll get reduced battery life potentially. So that's something to take in mind. Your mileage may vary in that regard. You have 800 volt architecture, that's the EGMP. You also get the vehicle to load functionality like the other Hyundai and Kia EVs, so that's pretty awesome. You can use up to 3.68 kilowatts of power. So that's all the technology pretty much. And on top of that, it's, as I said, the color palette of the car is inspired by nature. And again, you get six different interior combinations color-wise, so that's pretty cool in a way. And yeah, it really is a full-blown electric SUV. I don't think there's anything like it on the market right now, as far as I understand. And most SUVs are electric, in my own opinion, other than the Nio sort of three-seater SUV. There's pretty much crossovers at this point. So this is a full-blown SUV, and as I said, it really is pushing the limits of the EGMP architecture. Sooner than later, a future variant of this SUV will probably be on a newer architecture. It's their first ever electric SUV. And fun fact, it has a aerodynamic coefficient of 0.28, helps with range pretty much. And as I said, as I've talked about earlier, it also comes with swivel seats in the first and second row. So you can sort of kick back and relax and chit chat with other passengers. So yeah, it's a pretty cool car. We don't know about pricing, but it'll be available in select markets later this year, potentially the US and South Korea starting out, and hopefully the rest of the world. Pretty cool car, and will definitely take you places. Moving on, we're going to talk about this cool little EV before we head out. Steve Pegg, a former executive from Arrival, a electric startup, EV startup that tried to make, and is still working on making, an electric van that's easy to manufacture and assemble. I'll link a video so you can check that car out. It's pretty cool. But this former executive from Arrival has started his own startup called Helix, and he's basically creating an electric van that could work in emerging markets all over the world. And it's the Helix Took and Ride, pretty much. But it comes in different combinations, pretty much. The cargo, there's also the Helix cargo and truck. It's kind of like the Arrival truck that was being developed. We still don't have a production model of that EV, but apparently it's designed for emerging markets and basically to make switching to EVs easy and accessible to a lot of people. So you have four unique EVs here, the Tuck, the Ride, the Cargo, and the Truck. And the Ride is essentially like a van, more or less, closed body. And the Tuck is kind of like a tuk-tuk or rickshaw, if you know what I'm talking about. Also, you have the Cargo, which apparently is designed with capacity for 2,100 liters of cargo space, 500 kilograms of max payload, in a way. And a truck is kind of like, you can guess, a mini truck in a way. And apparently features LFP battery packs, four of them, but you can go up to four of them and giving you up to 200 kilometers of range starting out. So that's pretty cool in a way. But the design of the EV not only means that it's easy for a lot of people to, you know, it's easy for a lot of people to buy the car and use it, but more than everything, it's designed to be able to be manufactured and assembled anywhere in the world through a specific set of instructions that Helix will share. And they're aiming for a licensing model with various businesses around the world and in different parties around the world where they can manufacture their EVs and sell them and lease them out. Well, of course, Helix will provide the design and the instructions pretty much, and the overall life cycle of manufacturing an EV. And as their plan is also to offer it on a leasing basis, so as low as $0.25 an hour. So that's pretty cool in a way. And they're sort of testing this technology out with Siemens, who've provided a lot of software and resources to make this vehicle happen. and are going to do pilot runs in the UK and Singapore, but are looking to target emerging markets like South America and South Asia. So that's pretty cool in a way. They're looking to obviously electrify corporate fleets around the world. And I think, and I wish them the best of luck, because as I said, any solution that gets people off internal combustion vehicles will be welcome. All right, this leads us to the end of this week's episode. What do you think of everything I've heard today? All the phones, the Redmi Note 12, the Turbo, the Huawei's, you know, the new Kia EV9. What do you think? Let me know. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Sid_Mountain99. Follow me there if you can. Also, really, really appreciate all your support by subscribing to this podcast, listening to all the previous episodes, sharing this to your friends and family, leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. That'll definitely help. All your support is definitely appreciated. And yeah, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss another new episode of Mountain's Gadget Talk. But yeah, with all that being said, till next week, this is your boy Mountain signing out. Where we are, what are you up to? I hope you have a wonderful day and weekend ahead. All right, take care, and thank you for listening. All right, ciao.